Breaking It Down with Frank McKay. This is 103.9 LI News Radio.
I'd like to welcome everyone back to Breaking It Down. Our very special guest is actor, singer, Rex Smith. Rex, how are you?
I'm good. You're breaking it down. I'm building it up. That's what I do.
Well, listen, you've been building up for many years. I said to you off mic, a lot of people would kill to have the career you've had, and it's still going. A lot of years on Broadway, some TV, some soap.
Yep.
Lot of hits, a lot of music, but it's been a varied career. And you're not one of those guys that just kind of cruised through a career with roller skates on and just didn't hit any bumps. You've had some twists and turns, and I to be honest with you, I find them much more interesting. Careers that way a lot more interesting, and you learn a lot from them.
I think I look at a career and a life like a good coffee table book. Like I grew up and my parents had the Kon-Tiki, the story of the guys that sailed on the papyrus or whatever across the ocean trying to recreate it. And it was a big, story of perseverance. And that's what it's all about. That's at the end, I'm doing a show right now. I've created a show, Confessions of a Teen Idol, that takes you from 1973 to today. And it keeps growing because as I continue to do the show, I keep adding new stuff to it. But it is, as I have created the show, the interesting parts, just like of any life, is making it through the trials and, those tests of fire. That's, it's a pretty boring story to go, I bought another Ferrari and then I sat around and bought another one. Like, who cares?
Yeah.
But it's the comebacks and the sticking in the game and staying on deck ready to go swing away. That's the interesting stuff. And it makes an interesting life too. I feel quite fortunate that in my time, it was a time in the world, especially like Broadway and such, records and those kind of things, that I was still attached to the golden age of Columbia Records and such. I still lived in that world that was Frank Sinatra's world or the great Broadway, world. And it has been certainly fragmented now to, with YouTube and everything else, that I feel fortunate that I was able to have the experiences that really you could not afford to let a young man experience anymore. They're just not there,
Rex Smith. So, yeah, Rex Smith, if you're just tuning in, is our very special guest, and he's done a little bit of everything. And it started out in Jacksonville, Florida for you, right? Everything started out?
That's correct, yeah. My dad was a naval aviator in World War II, and after the war came back there, and he ended up being working his way up in Prudential, vice president of advertising for Prudential. Raised four boys, and I went to high school in Atlanta, Georgia. And when I got out of school, I had a soccer scholarship to Georgia State, but I told my dad that I knew I wanted to be a rock and roll star, and so I had my rock and roll dream, which led me to the gas station two blocks from my high school for 6 months. Pumping gas for last year's juniors, now seniors, But saved my money, put together my own true band, because the last 2 years of high school, I was lead singer in, the biggest band in Atlanta, local band. So I was opening for the James Gang and stuff like that on the weekend at the Civic Center. So I had already cut my teeth, and I knew where I wanted to go, and I had to get started, so couple of years in the South, playing everywhere from Knoxville, Tennessee, down to Fort Lauderdale, and finally headed up to New York and got signed to Columbia at 20 years old.
Rex, you said you're one of four boys. Where are you in the birth order?
I'm the youngest, so I got a lot of razzing from my older brothers. They used to call me TCFW, too cute for words, or CTOE, cutest thing on earth. So they kind of razzed me because I was an enthusiastic. I guess I kind of, my parents said I kind of lit up the room when I'd come in. So you have to take a certain amount of razzing from older brothers.
Well, Columbia Records agreed with them, apparently. I mean, that's something. I mean, to be signed, I mean, that's a teen idol. I mean, they're thinking teen idol at that time. And
Originally, I was signed. I opened for Ted Nugent for 2 years. I had my band. I had a band. I was the only guy signed, but I had a band called Wreck, and I opened for Ted Nugent's Cat Scratch Fever 6 month tour, and the year after that, played the last concert with, so I was managed by Aerosmith's manager. I was being groomed to be Van Halen, if you will. And the last concert that I played with Ted was Madison Square Garden on our second tour, but we were also headlining with Lynyrd Skynyrd. So I played the last concert with Skynyrd. 3 days later, we were supposed to play, all three of us, at Madison Square Garden. Skynyrd had the tragic plane crash, and it was just Ted and I. And when I was playing Madison Square Garden, some people saw me, producers saw me, that were creating a movie called Sooner or Later, and that's where the Teen Idol came in. So it totally came out of left field. I was being groomed to be good time rock and roller, and that was what my aim was. And it took a 180-degree turn. So that was, these things I explore in my show, and it makes for a pretty good show, makes for a pretty good story. But the ascent of a Teen Idol was so quick and so just, it was mind-boggling. It was Beatlemania without George, John, and Paul or something like that.
Right.
And I knew anything that happened that fast could and would disappear that fast. And
did you know that at the time? Did you know that?
Yeah, I did. I was going, this can't be sustainable, right? I mean, I just didn't, and I didn't feel comfortable with that moniker, and I knew that I'd had a lot of growing and development as an artist and everything that I wanted to do, and that was not going to allow me to do it. And Broadway was really the golden key to that, to mature and grow as an artist.
How did you do with your money? I mean, were you good with it? Did, a 20-year-old, you figure he's making that much money, he's going to blow it, I mean, did you handle your money wisely, or you kind of blew through it?
No, well, there have been so many crash and burns around me, the landscape of young friends that I've had, Andy Gibb or Michael Jackson or so many died too young guys that I have always had I'm in this as an artist and as, it's really just almost like I have no choice. It's just the only thing that fits for me.
Yeah.
I have a comfortable, being the youngest of four boys, I watched other people's mistakes and learned from their mistakes. So I've done quite well in terms of watching other mistakes and avoiding some of those pitfalls. There's no real, you can't get an MBA in rock and roll. I mean, there's no finishing school for it. You just have to experience yourself and dance between the raindrops in a way. But I always looked at the tragedy of like Elvis Presley was sort of like being a pathfinder for everyone that followed in that sort of focus and attention of the world, that if you're not careful, this could happen to you. Right.
That's a good point. That's a very good point. And a lot of people don't point that out because it's almost sacrilegious, to look at Elvis that way. But you're right. I mean, he's a wonderful role model of, originally what to do. And then certainly, what bad can happen. So, I mean,
what bad can happen, and it's out there, and it is definitely, we just experienced it again with Michael Jackson. I mean, that was tragic, but I was pretty good friends with him. I met him in when I was doing Solid Gold, and I always had a front row seat to his shows, full backstage. He just always took care of me. It was a very nice, professional friendship that we had. And when I heard about that day, I was like, there you go again. You just have to be very careful. It's like a minefield of potential tragedy that's there. And so anyway, I have learned from those previous mistakes. Watch your history, right? Because I felt like history was repeating itself with Michael, just like Elvis, right? And that was, I don't condemn people like that. I feel more of the tragedy part of it going, there's really no guidebook for it. You have to find your own way.
Singer, actor, Broadway star, former Teen Idol, Rex Smith is our special guest today, and he is talking about the trials and tribulations, and he has a hell of a story to tell, and he's putting it together. I the one thing that that happened. Another thing that happened when Michael Jackson died is Farrah Fawcett died on the same day.
I know that because I knew Farrah because I was.
Yeah, I thought you did.
Her.
Did you date Farrah?
No, because Tatum O'Neill and I dated, and so I was doing Pirates. Tatum was like my girlfriend, so Ryan and Farrah and I, the four of us, had dinner, you know, twice a week.
Oh, no kidding.
So, on a really good, friendly level. And I remember that morning, that was like a double whammy, not saying, woe is me. I'm just saying it affected the world.
Yeah,
but,
wow.
But on a personal level, I was like, oh my gosh, twice in a day. And two icons and also two friends, you know. But, you know, also I have to look at the wonderful experiences and the moments shared with both those people too, you know, because you can't look back in, I don't look back in anger at anything. And I'm not saying angry about that, but I try to think about the good because we're all, everybody owes life or death, right? It's just, you do what you can to protect yourself and the people you love as long as you can.
Rex, when you mentioned your friendship with Michael Jackson, you said it was a good professional friendship. Did he have, were you close enough to him to know whether he had real friends?
Well, he, on a level like that, beyond the presidency, you know what I mean?
Right.
It is a handlers upon handlers, and that's something that I learned. I know the moment when I kind of turned my back on a lot of that attitude of people and handlers and relationships that were handled by your manager or your personal calling somebody you're supposedly in love with and saying, hey, I'm not going to see you anymore or something like that. It was a weird, fragmented sort of Picasso painting of life that I do recall at I was at a party at Rod Stewart's, and the party was going on and stuff, and I left because I was playing tennis the next day, and I was going flying because I'm a private pilot, and I was getting up to go flying, and I left that party, and I remember driving down Sunset Boulevard, and I'm going, it's Friday night, Rex. Why did you leave, you know? And I almost did a U-turn and went back, but I kept driving home. And I remember that moment, and that was in about 1984, And that's when I kind of retired from the field of participating in a Hollywood sort of thing, and I started having kids and ended up 5 kids later and a grandson. I get much more value out of that.
I know a lot of people, when you said grandson, it just went through them.
I know that. Well, listen, when I heard I was having one, it was like a nail in the coffin. That's the first reaction. Like, what? I've run my race, but you know what? It's rank and privilege.
Yeah, hey, listen.
What it is.
People are living a lot older nowadays, and I keep telling people that. I keep interviewing guys that are in their late 70s and 80s, and I say, hey, it's not old anymore. But it's, you know what? People are living into 100 and beyond. You know, medicine is there. I'm 47, so I kind of look at myself as middle aged now, and I mean, it's a little different, but. So many people out there, and if you're just tuning in, Rex Smith, actor, singer, Rex Smith, has lived the dream, and he's seen ups and downs, and he has seen it all. But so many guys listening right now will want to ask you this question, right? I mean, you've had every type of girl follow you, as you can imagine, and just like I imagine Justin Bieber. Right. You could relate with somebody like that. Right. A young man at, 21 years old and he's got girls throwing themselves at him, starlets and wannabe starlets and everything else.
Right.
Does it become tiresome at all? Or do you just enjoy it and just kind of get used to it?
I can tell you that the loneliest time of my life was at the height of my popularity. It was when I on any person I turned to and talked to was not looking or talking to me as myself, 2 years prior. They were talking to Rex Smith, the icon. And it became more than apparent. And I can remember, I have moments on the timeline of my life, like I mentioned about driving down Sunset Boulevard. Why did I take that? That was a definite mark on the timeline. I can recall that period. And I remember a specific, I've got my penthouse apartment in New York, and it's a Saturday night, and I'm sitting there at my dining table, just, you know, my head in my hands, just wondering where's this life going? Because even if I met a nice girl and whatever, within 2 days, it would always, eventually it would rear its head going, I can't believe I'm sitting here with Rex Smith, you know, and you'd go, well, there goes another one. So it's up to the individual. Not, you know, people can go like, what's he talking about? That's the best thing in the world. Everything comes with a price, right? And I think that that's part of an emotional stability that I have that has enabled me to, you know, I still have a 10-year-old daughter and a 14-year-old son, the last blast kids that I'm raising, and I'm getting more gold and just life out of that than any of that other stuff. So that's just, that's up to the individual. Some people thrive on it, but I felt like if you lived on that diet, you know, you would die by that diet, you know. I'm not trying to sound too much like a somber guy. I'm not at all. It's just...
I don't think you come across like that at all. I mean, I think you have it all in perspective. It's a unique fraternity that you're there. I mean, like, you know, they're, you know, 20, 30 years from now, I mean, Justin Bieber is going to be, you know, wondering, hopefully he survives, hopefully he doesn't, you know, get himself into, into a position where he, you know, gets heavily involved with drugs. And again, I'm just assuming from, I don't know the guy.
Right, it just
doesn't, you know, a lot of these things don't happen to end in happy endings, and I hope it does for him and some of these other folks. But let me ask you this question: at that point, at that height, did you have more hanger-ons trying to make a buck off of you, or more people hanging on to you trying to just get involved with the lifestyle?
It went through all ranges. It went to my best friends growing up, you know, trying to have a beer with them, going, hey, guys, and everybody going, you're different. I go, I'm not different. Everybody around me is different. You're different. You didn't look at me this way, you know, X number of months ago. But now you look at me, I come in a room, and it's a completely different setup. It's not for me, and I'm desperate to have it as it was in terms of friendships and relationships, right? And I think you said a perfect thing about a fraternity. You know, just... The moniker of teen idol has been abused, you know, because especially I believe that I've proven my worth in six Broadway shows and all the work that I've done, that there was, you know, I have a body of work underneath which as an artist. But a lot of, especially in that time period, the late 70s, they were just grabbing guys off the beach and creating. They've been doing that since, you know, Taff Hunter or whatever. I'm not saying Tab Hunter, I've seen him in some good movies and such, right? But the machine of building a teen idol was more accidental on me than purposeful, right?
Yeah.
But if you take just the teen idols, let's just call it the teen idols, and I prefer to think in the company or in the shadow of Sinatra, who was the Bobby Soxer teen idol, Elvis, the Beatles, I mean, the teen idols, if you took them all of them since, let's say, 1930 to today, we wouldn't fill up, you know, the bottom floor of Sardi's restaurant. You know what I mean? It wouldn't even be a point on a graph in terms of population. It's a very small, unique fraternity. It really is. And in that fraternity, there has been splinters of huge drop off of tragedies, and there has been some that have found their way. But for every one of them, there's been wobbly moments because it's a tough thing, number one, to enter into. And it's an even harder thing to exit from, you know, when it falls away. And some people can't live without, what, but I am, but I was, but do you know who I used to be, kind of thing. And I prefer to just look at it as an event, and it's a very healthy thing that I've turned it into this Confessions of a Teen Idol show, that I've used it as an art form. And it's really not an egotistical one-man show of look at me. It's more of exploring just an individual's journey.
Hey, before you go on, Rick Smith is our guest. I just want to remind everybody. We're coming up on a break. Do we have you for another segment, Rex?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. Yeah. We have about a minute left in this. Give a website where people can kind of check this out.
Go to Rex Smith on Facebook. And I just posted their stuff. I put postings up of my show. You can see videos of confessions. You can follow where I am on tour, where I am in the world. I found that to be the best thing. There is RexSmith.com you can go to, but honestly, it, you know, Facebook just has become the coin of the realm, you know. So yeah. I'm pretty good at keeping that and keeping in touch. There's some wonderful people around the world, and I really invite you to come and join me there, because that is where I gain more power to bring my shows to other parts of, you know, the U.S. and around the world. The strength of going, look how many followers I have, and that becomes a flashpoint for booking shows and such. So I invite and encourage everybody, if you want to see me, please join in on that and follow me there. You know, that's enough of that push, but that's it.
Actor, singer, former teen idol, Rex Smith will join us and be with us right after
Breaking
this break.
It Down with Frank McKay. This is 1039 LI News Radio.
I'd like to welcome everyone back to Breaking It Down. Our special guest today is someone who's seen it all. Actor, Broadway star, a soap actor for a while, and certainly singer and former teen idol, Rex Smith. Rex, we haven't talked much about soap opera acting. You didn't do it very long, right? You're on one of the major soaps. Which one was it?
I was, as World Turns, they call it front burner. I was the number, you know, the hardest working guy every day, 35 pages. I was doing Grand Hotel on Broadway when I first started doing the show, and for the first 4 to 5 months, I'm doing 8 shows a week on Broadway and working 5 days a week on the soap opera, and it was bone-crushing workload. I was the top-paid guy on that show. I did it for 2 years. They wanted me to sign for 4 more, and I left the show because they assured me I'd be able to continue doing theater work, and I was going to do Midsummer Night's Dream in Central Park at the Delacorte for the Shakespeare Festival with Bill Hurt, and they wouldn't let me out to do it, and that kind of broke the bond or the contractual that I had, the understanding that we had together when I signed, and there was other things I needed to do. And I remember when truthfully, in the coffee table book of my life, it's sort of a blank page. It was not the most, it was financially rewarding, but it wasn't, didn't really, I just, it wasn't my cup of tea. And I remember as I was leaving the show, the producer was pulling his hair out going, "You can't leave this show. You're the highest paid actor on the show." I go, "Well, why do you think you pay me more? Because you know I'm going to leave. That's right. Why you paid me, right? These other people have been here 25 years. Where are they going to go?" I mean, not knocking it, but, you know, they didn't have the, you know, the Broadway and musical sort of internal engine that I have. I'm really built for 8 o'clock at night, 70 to 100 people in a cast and crew, and working in synchronicity and taking people on a journey emotionally for 3 hours. That fills my cup. Sitting around having coffee waiting to do 20 seconds of shooting is not... It's hard for me to, I've never been a real, you know, I haven't chased that much, because I feel more like an athlete than, you know, it's an athletic endeavor working on Broadway. And the other half that we haven't mentioned is, you know, I was, and I still am, will always be, I'm the original Daredevil. I did the last Hulk movie it was a backdoor TV pilot to be, it's called Trial of the Incredible Hulk. So I am the original Daredevil, and
wow,
now that Marvel, the Marvel universe rules the universe, I sometimes feel like Pluto out there, but you can't, it's pretty funny. I go with my wife, we went to see Captain America and the latest movie, and she was going, "How'd you like it?" I said, "Well, as a member of the Marvel universe, I felt it was very good." And she was like poking me in the ribs going, "You know, we cut that out." And I go, "Why? It's fact. It's true." And also, Street Hawk was my other action. You know, I got to live my James Bond sort of dream there with a motorcycle that shot rockets and had a laser and did 300 miles an hour. And of course, George Clooney's first part ever on TV played my best friend, dies in my arms in it. And I talk about that in Confessions of a Teen Idol too, because, you know, here's two guys right there. You meet some guys on the way up and they never come down again. But I did a small two-hander play a few years ago, and the girl was the current girlfriend of George's. And the first day of rehearsal, she goes, "My boyfriend says hi. He said you got him his first start, his first thing on TV ever." And I go, "Yeah, who's that?" She goes, "George." I went, "Well, George who?" She goes, "George Clooney." I went, "Oh yeah, sure, wow. I remember George." So
if that's his current girlfriend, that might become the
No, it was not the current. This was years
ago. Oh, I got you. I got you.
4 years ago or something like that.
Yeah. You believe he's getting married?
I don't know. You know, I believe that he's a savvy guy in a world that requires a lot of savvy to be that savvy,
right,
you know?
Right, of course.
There again is the slide rule that in this business you can possibly sit and feel really degraded and go like, "Oh, look at that, and look at me, and look at that, and look at me." But I don't use that slide rule. I look at my kids and look at my interaction with my personal life. I always worked, you know, some people live to work, and I work to live. I always have. I mean, my work supports my personal life. And I try to find the best work or project that I can, which is why I ultimately, and it's the time in my life to do it, this one-man show, Confessions of a Teen Idol, is my third act in my life that I plan on building and continue to grow this show up until finally the end zone's going to be my, you know, I'm on the 20-yard line right now. I'm not in the red zone, but on the other side of the field, you know, that end zone, I got to take this show to New York and do it. I want to do it on Broadway have at least a short run. And then, of course, I got to blow it all out and put it on Vegas for a while. So that's still giving me a pretty big carrot to chase in the third act of my life.
Let me remind everyone, if they're just tuning in, we are speaking to actor, singer, Broadway star, former soap star, and certainly former...
Superhero,
right? The original Daredevil, Rex Smith. And Rex, yeah, you've seen it all. You know, when you mentioned the Marvel, universe, being involved in that, do you want to know something? The guy who booked you for me, Steve Fallon, is a great guy. The first thing he mentioned, and I said, Rex Smith, my God, that's great. I'm thrilled to have Rex Smith. And I'm thinking about all the music and the singing and the hits and everything like that. And you know what he thought? He was like, he said, you know, he's the original Daredevil. That was one of the first things he brought. But he's a comic guy, and you know, so am I.
Yeah.
You know, to a certain degree. And do you ever get recognized for that? I mean, do you?
Yeah, I never know what somebody what you've just described is kind of my life, right? Because I don't know. I can like at my show and in this Confessions of a Teen Idol I'm doing. There'll be after the show, I quite often go out and do some meet and greet out in the lobby, or such as people go and I want to get their personal feedback and such. And I'll be there. There'll be a husband and wife there. And the wife is going, "I had your poster on my wall." And the husband's going, "You were my hero in Daredevil or Street Hawk." I never know what point overlap there is when people come up to me. I was at the People's Choice Award years ago, and the movie Sideways, the star in that movie, had just gotten the best actor or the most popular
Paul Giamatti?
Guy that year.
Was that Paul Giamatti?
No, the other, he was in Thomas Hayden Church.
Yeah, right.
Right? Okay, he had just gotten the award. I was in the swag room where they're giving away the swag. I was with Treat Williams. He had a TV show. He asked me to go with him. I'm in black tie just hanging around quietly in the corner while everybody's getting their toasters and whatever. And the crowd roars. This guy wins the award. He just comes, like swaggering into the room, like he just, the audience is still applauding. He's got the trophy in his hand, and he yells across the room. He goes, "That's Rex Effin Smith." He goes, "I saw you open for Ted Nugent in Texas, 1978. And I was like, "What?"
That's funny.
And then at that point, suddenly I had two bags in my hand. I had a toaster. Everybody's filling my bag. And the lady whose family owns the Indianapolis 500, her husband came over and said, "Listen, I want to tell you something. You're, of all the stars in this place, my wife's family owns the Indy. She wants to invite you to the Indianapolis 500 because of everybody here, she's excited about seeing you. And you've just been standing over in the corner, like very quietly, you know, whatever." And so you just never know, right? So I always keep sort of ready for anything in terms of hopefully all good. And I'm pretty fortunate that my relationships in terms of my with people in the world, how they respond to me or whatever is pretty healthy and pretty friendly, you know, because for a guy that's come through rock and roll to soaps to this, to that, and the other, I seem to have left a pretty good, you know, open kind of relationship with people in the public.
We're speaking with Rex Smith, if you guys are just tuning in now. And Rex, let me ask you this, and I know when I ask this, some guys out there are going to think, oh, poor Rex, right? But do you think, like, good-looking guys, you know, guys that are, you know, were in these teen magazines, and I mean Leif Garrett, and you know, and different. And I'm not comparing you to Leif Garrett. I mean, you've had a lot more longevity, right? But do you think there's some prejudice against you guys?
Oh, for sure. I mean, that was another thing that, like, I was for 2 years. I'm touring with Ted Nugent. I played everything from Anaheim Stadium, Madison Square Garden, and every Coliseum in America. And I played with Rush, and AC/DC opened for me for 3 weeks when they first came over. Hmm. I toured with Tom Petty, everybody. So I really was in the most remarkable time in rock and roll, one of the most remarkable times, Coliseum Rock. And when You Take My Breath Away came out, and I'm on this blitzkrieg of publicity and performing around the world for almost 2 years straight, the same radio stations that I was, you know, 6 months before, they're going, Rex is rocking tonight at the Coliseum, come on down. They're going like, yeah, screw you, give me some of those chicks you did. So I was like sitting there. That was another thing that the sort of smoke detector was going off, going, this teen idol thing can't really lead to much more than just a lot of people being kind of angry at you for being, you know, you're in the eye of the storm on a thing. And at that time, there was only three channels of TV and then VHF, right?
So right.
The import of doing the NBC Movie of the Week on Sunday night, the next day I went to Bloomingdale's just because, you know, all right. So I rode my motorcycle, this is in New York City, and I'm in Bloomingdale's and I'm looking maybe to buy a shirt or something. And I see Bill Cosby being interviewed on, you know, camera set up on sticks, and they're interviewing him in the middle of Bloomingdale's. And I hear all these people screaming, and I'm thinking, that poor guy can't go anywhere. And 20 minutes later, I had locked myself in a dressing room, and there was, you know, 500 girls, whatever, trying to break in. And the police department came, NYPD, and they're going, who the hell are you? And I go, you know what, I was on a movie last night. Maybe that had something to do with it. And that was the beginning of, you know, kind of Rextacy around the world.
it's a small fraternity. I mean, it's really it's not an everyday thing. You know, I mean, I meet folks that are in that fraternity because I interview them, and it's but other than that, I mean, you're not running into, you know, the Rex Smiths of the world or Fabian. I mean, and again, you had a much not comparing you to Fabian, but
no,
you know.
But you are. It's in that he's right there in the in there at the little bar at Sardi's with me. So
yeah.
It was Frankie Valli. So it was
Frankie,
you know,
Avalon.
Sinatra's right there. Frankie Avalon. Yeah, it just goes on and on. But when you really crunch the numbers, it's not even a speck of sand on Malibu Beach.
Yeah, it's not.
In terms of population, it's an amazing event. Okay, and it. I think the reason that has a tarnished kind of name and sort of like a stance thing when people say it is there's a tremendous amount of jealousy about something that can happen to anybody like that. What guy in the world wouldn't dream of being on that pinnacle, that top of the heap, you know?
Yeah, and people are cheering against you. I mean, there are people that, you know, obviously envious of you, but people are cheering against you. When you're in that magazine, when you're in there, the guys, you know, Scott Baio or Robbie Benson or whoever, you know, is in Teen Beat, Tiger Beat, the guys are just waiting for them to gain weight. They're waiting for them to...
It's amazing that still is such a... People are so excited about saying that, you know. I had no idea that those magazines had that kind of import that to this day people still get excited saying, look, and if they do a thing on, if I do an interview on TV or whatever, that's going to be, they're going to go and dig and find those things up, and it'll be on the video pre-interview thing, right?
Yeah.
There'll be the covers of this, that, and the other. And I'm thinking sometimes I go, well, where's Rolling Stone and where's Time Magazine and New York Times? You know, with the biggest show on Broadway, you know, but it's it once it's there, it's there.
It's so. It's the price you pay. And it, for those just tuning in, Rex Smith, actor, former teen idol, Rex Smith, singer. You know, we passed right over something, or I glanced over something, and I apologize for doing this, but did you say you were on tour with Lynyrd Skynyrd when their plane crashed?
I played the last concert with Skynyrd. So Tad and Skynyrd were co-headlining. I was the opening act, my band Rex. I was having beers, drinks with Ronnie Van Zant the night before he died. And I said, because we were at the hotel, we played down south. Tell you the truth, I can't remember where the last one, I think it was Florida, but in 3 days was Madison Square Garden, and that was our last gig. I was going to bed, I had to fly back early in the morning, and I toasted him, you know, like ching with my beer, and I said, I'll see you at the Garden. He goes, you bet, and that's the last I ever saw of him. And I got to tell you, Skynyrd was my favorite band that I toured with, because I'm from, you know, Jacksonville, grew up in Atlanta, and I'm a Southern boy and that thing, and they were Southern gentlemen. And Ted, I learned more of who not to be from Ted Nugent than any individual I ever met.
No kidding.
Yet we have the same manager, right? So I was stuck to him like a tick. He couldn't shake me. And but Skynyrd, because Ted was getting, he was really treating me rough on tour, like setting up the equipment so I had no room, making my microphone go out, sabotaging what he could, and so much that my roadies made up their own shirts, and it said Rock Wars for our tour shirts, made like in the Star Wars font, you know, but it was the Rock Wars with Ted. And my last conversation with Ronnie was going, how are my boys treating you? I said, it's a joy working with you and your band. You know, I love this band. And I was 21 years old, and when I got to New York, I heard the plane crash, and I heard the reason for the crash was that the road manager didn't want to pay a $500 landing fee to refuel. Okay, that's why they just ran out of gas. And so the next night, I'm headlining now. Instead of playing a 40-minute, you know, baby band opening act, I played an hour and a half, and I got two encores. And Ron Delsner, who was the promoter, he said, I've never seen a band that could come in on a night like this, but and get two encores when the whole place was in mourning for Skynyrd. But I turned that crowd around in a very healthy, good rock and roll way, and it was a highlight, my dad said, of his life, of following one of his son's life. That night, he goes, of all the things you've done, because we didn't break a string or a drumstick that night, it went perfect. And my dad just went, that was the night of nights for me to see my 21-year-old son kicking out the jams like that. So. Yeah, so that's quite a thing. People are astounded at this show, my show, Confessions of a Teen Idol. They at the end, when I meet and greet with people, they go, I had no idea. Like, just now, you're having that moment, that aha moment. I didn't know that you toured with Skynyrd. And that is as deep into rock and roll as you're going to get. You're not going to get deeper than that in 1978, except... So that's 1978, and in 1979 is when it exploded as... That was my third album, Sooner or Later. My first album was called Rex. Second album, Where Do We Go From Here? And my third album was the one that really kicked me around the world, and that was Becoming a Teen Idol. So it's an unusual thing at that, because so many of the Teen Idol things, it's manufactured. We got him, and we put him, and we built this around him. Nothing was built around me except to make me into, like I say, you know, Van Halen.
Rex Smith is the person you are listening to, actor, singer Rex Smith. We have about 2 minutes left with Rex.
Yeah.
Let's talk about your show. Let's talk about, you know, where you go from here, what stage it's at, what's going on with it. Let's just...
Well, let me describe to you, it's a 90-minute show, two acts, you know, like a one-hour first act, half-hour second act. So I always want to let people get out and get going, because the second act... I've been too many plays myself or whatever. I sit there. It is a complete audio and visual, completely. I've got projection behind me, and it follows. I have amassed all the video and such of me from the original MTV type videos that Columbia was making in the day. All the B-roll of the Broadway shows that I've done, Sunset Boulevard, Scarlet Pimpernel, also the story of, I met my oldest son, who is the father of my grandson, Brandon. He was 16 years old. I was doing Sunset Boulevard with Diane Carroll, and a 16-year-old boy shows up on a Wednesday matinee in the front center seat and watching me like a hawk through the whole show, and I'm so proud that I was raising money for charity in the lobby, taking Polaroids. I don't know if people remember that, but it's imagine Instagram that you could hold in your hand. Okay,
right,
it was
right.
a camera. It took a thing, and he got in line with everybody else, and I took a picture with him, and I said, "You seem like a very intense young man. Are you interested in the arts? What's your name?" He said, "Brandon." And I looked up, and I realized I was looking at my firstborn son. I knew he was my son. And he goes, "Could I have 5 minutes of your time?" And his mother, on her deathbed, said, "Your father could be Rex Smith." And that story is the is
mind blowing.
The second act, and he is arguably the best kid I got because he knows what he didn't have. And the great thing about it is we have a completely level playing field because there was no. I was 23, and his mother was the rep for Columbia Records. In Calgary, where I was the Justin Bieber star, whatever,
yeah.
you know, at the Calgary Stampede. And it was a full moon Mustang convertible looking over the city of Calgary. And I asked this girl to come with me because I had 2 weeks at the Kahala Hilton in Hawaii. I said, "Why don't you come with me? Talk about taking sand to the beach." Okay, I was the most popular young man. I'm asking this girl to come with me for 2 weeks to Hawaii just to see where it goes. And she said, "I'm getting divorced. I'm separated. It wouldn't work." So the next day, I was inexorably pulled away by the vortex of just being the most popular young man on the planet at the
yeah.
time. I never heard from her. I never looked back because it was just looking forward. I mean, and so she never told me, she never told him until her deathbed. And that brought us together. And that is a story. It's the greatest story never told. And now I'm telling it.
Amazing.
So,
just amazing.
I am so proud of that, and also that there is no scarlet letter in the world for so many children and parents out there that may feel that there's something, you know, that you can't make that connection. Yes, you can. You can make that connection, and your other kids can make that connection, and it's an instant thing. It's more instant than instant coffee, you know.
Hey, Rex, this is amazing. We're out of time, unfortunately.
Yep.
Quick, give the website where people can check this
yeah.
out.
You'll see, come to Rex Smith on Facebook, and you're going to find everything there. It's my go-to place. That's my command central thing. There's rexsmith.com. You can find things, and I promise to get in there and freshen that up. But the Facebook is the newspaper for everybody, and it's a good sunny side of the street thing. We don't, and the people participating in it, we're not political, and we're not talking about what we hate. We're staying on the sunny side of the street, so come join the sunshine over there at Rex Smith at Facebook. And I appreciate this time, and anybody listening, appreciate you hanging in there and staying with this interview to hear me out.
And listen, congratulations on really a great career. I mean, it's a great career. It's still going strong. Check out the show, everyone. Rex, thanks for being here.